Okay, already I see so many messages coming in on the WhatsApp for our Lily O'Brien's competition. We're giving away a Lily O'Brien's hamper to celebrate the lead up to Easter. Just text the word chocolate followed by your name and where you're from to 0833 97 97 97. Celine Garvey is in studio with us. Good morning, Celine.
I want chocolate now.
I know, that's what I was just saying beforehand. It's very hard to give away those Lily O'Brien hampers because they come into us, they're sitting out in reception, and then we have to go and part with them, which is quite tough.
It's a tough day, definitely. But I'm not here to talk about chocolate.
No.
I'm here
no.
to talk about something else altogether. Like, now listen, you'll have to tell me to stop. Because I will keep talking. I'm used to being on the other side. I'm here to talk about cancer. It was something very... I did not think I would be sitting here talking about cancer in relation to myself. Doesn't everybody say, Jeannie, do you know who's gotten cancer?
Yeah.
And now that's my name. So, I have. I have something called CUP, carcinoma of unknown primary.
Right.
They don't know where it came from. They have an idea it's something to do with my bile duct region. And it's decided to take home in my liver. And I've decided to call it Larry the Liver Lesion, just so you know, it's an official name. And there's a little bit on my adrenal gland as well. That's where I am. But the journey to get there has been insane because this is only since December, really, when I first started going, there's something not right with me. But there was something not right with me probably in summer of last year.
Yeah.
And it was a simple pain in my shoulder. And I put it down to the fact that I had an accident, a horse riding one, when I was 18. And I've always had problems with my shoulder.
Right. So it was nothing too unusual, but was it a little bit different than before?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So I kept going, there's something going on with my shoulder. And everyone was like, you know what, Celine? It's muscular. That has to be muscular. You teach dance, you know? I teach Zumba. I was teaching like 4 classes a week. And I was like, it's something to do with that. And I went, you know what, you're probably right, because I loved working my upper body. And I said, yeah, it's definitely that. And somebody else goes, you know what it is? As soon as you turn 40, everything falls apart. And I went, it's probably right too. And somebody else said, you know, menopause. And then, of course, sorry, I'm mentioning bras. I had an issue with every single one I was wearing felt too tight. And I was like, what the hell is that about? Mm. I'm not putting on weight. So I just kind of started to ignore it. And eventually I went, I can't ignore this anymore. So I went to the doctor with what I thought was a chest infection. They believed it was pleurisy, so they gave me medication for pleurisy. Mm. It didn't go away. The pain in the shoulder was still there. It didn't go away. I went back again and they went, maybe it's not. Maybe it's something else. Maybe you've thrown a clot in your lung. I went to A&E and actually they didn't notice anything in my bloods at that time. And if they did, well... No one told me, but they did say maybe hang around, but we believe it's still pleurisy. So I went away again. I went to another doctor who said, no, I'll give you a steroid. It's definitely still pleurisy. And eventually my own lovely doctor, she said, there's something going on. And the reason she said there's something going on, I was teaching a Zumba class and I felt something under my ribs. And I thought it was like a little football. They're like, not a football. Sorry, that's too big. A golf ball.
Yeah.
And I kept going, what is that thing?
So you could actually physically feel the lump now, and that was the first time that you could actually feel it.
Yeah. So my liver had obviously been inflamed for a long time, and it was from the tightness of wearing a bra that I could actually feel there was something. It felt like my rib cages were too big.
Yeah.
It felt like it was too big for my body. So she felt something, and I could see in her face that she felt something, and she said, listen, we'll get an ultrasound. So I got private ultrasound because I said, I'm not waiting. I really wanted to know because I was feeling really unnerved at this point, already having been in A&E and everyone thinking there was nothing wrong. So the ultrasound, I remember the guy really well. He was really cool. He went through and went, oh yeah, that's grand. Turn this way, turn that way. That's lovely. It's beautiful, same beautiful. And then within a couple of days, my doctor said, can you come in and see me, please? And I had my daughter with me in the waiting in the reception. And my doctor, she's just an incredible woman. She took down her mask for a moment and I went, this is serious.
Yeah.
And she said, you have a 13-centimetre lesion on your liver. And there's that feeling of your entire body losing all its blood. And that's what I had. I thought, okay, I don't know what this is, but I know this is not good.
Mm. But it's like you see that in movies and you know, you hear people, as you say, you know, God, did you hear such a body is not well or such a... But when you're sitting there and you're the one that's across the table from the doctor and you're hearing those words, what goes through your head? Does anything go through your head?
Nothing. It was a bit of a blank. I think I had a moment of going, ah, that can't be right.
Yeah.
maybe it was the brass. It's after cutting all the way into my liver and causing a lesion.
Yeah.
Maybe it's something benign that they're going to get rid of and this is all a big joke. You know, my dad died of motor neuron disease, so whenever we get like kind of crazy news, we're like, this can't be happening to the Garvey's, really?
Mm.
No, it is. And they went and did some further digging. My own doctor made a really a call to a liver specialist. Turns out my insurance didn't cover, even though I have private health insurance, didn't cover pretty much any of the, well, it covered certain scans, but not all of them. So I ended up going back into A&E and going through there. And that was amazing. Very, very quickly, once I got in there, the scans started getting done. I did end up having to spend a weekend where I'm just sitting there going, what's wrong with me? And you get this panic and fear, and it's an awful sensation. But I had my CTs, I had brain scans, I had a liver biopsy, which was not nice. I did it all. And then I got out on the 2nd of February. I remember because Imelda May was playing the night before in the theatre and I was really looking forward to going to that and I couldn't. And yeah, I got out going, I feel awful. And I broke down that weekend. My sister will show you a message I sent her I don't remember sending. But obviously I decided, I'm done. This is going to take me now.
Mm.
And I'd say there's a lot of people out there who have some diagnosis. There's so many people sick in this world and there's so many people fighting. And you have a moment where you break, but then you have to find a way to keep going. So I also decided I would go away with my daughter to Central Parks for a little bit because we had already had it booked for ages ago. And I threw a clot in my leg while I was there. So I had to come back and go to A&E again. That can happen with a cancer diagnosis. You can have clots. And at that time, I still didn't know I had cancer. I didn't know. And now I inject myself with blood thinner,
yeah,
which I've been doing since February. I did spend 12 hours in A&E that night. That was a tough night in A&E. Fair play to them all for keeping so calm in there. I don't know how they do that. And I'm doing that now continuously. I'm on a huge amount of medication. But to find out that I had cancer, I did have to make an appointment with my own doctor. Nobody had gotten back to me. And I was starting to get really worried. Apologies. And I made an appointment and she ended up telling me.
So it really has happened very, very quickly.
Yeah.
You know, these last few months, say December, January, February, and now we're into March, have been a roller coaster. But when was an actual plan set out then where you decide, right, I have cancer, here's what's going to happen and here's how you're going to be treated?
Yeah, February.
February.
I can't tell you exactly the date. I think it was the middle of February. We're in March now, aren't we? Yes.
Yeah.
Your time goes. I don't know what day it is. I don't know where I am. I'm aware it's KFM. I can see it behind you. It's sometime in February. They set me a plan. It was a very, very clear plan. They also told me what I have. They really don't know exactly what they're dealing with, what they will try and do. It can't be removed. That's a very hard thing to hear. They will try and reduce it, and that's what they're planning to do.
What does that mean? What does that actually mean? If they say they can't remove it, but it can be reduced?
So they will attempt to shrink what's in there. So
nice.
I have seen it on a PET scan now, and I look like, my liver just looks like, my brother said it looked in the shape of the World Cup lit up like fireworks.
Right.
And that's what it looks like. And my adrenal gland a bit beside that. The aim is to stop it moving anywhere else, first of all, and also to shrink back what is there as much as they can. So if you see a football, basically let the air out of it. Try and shrink it down.
Mm.
And that's what they'll do for me, and then we'll see from there, because there is no clear diagnosis. If you're told you have one particular type of cancer, they will do something specific. The markers on mine are for a certain type of cancer, but it's not there. It's grown in a different place.
Yeah.
It's grown where it's not meant to.
What kind of treatment are you getting? So you're taking medication. Uh-huh. Are you going to get chemo, radiation?
Yes, I started chemo. Radiation I don't think is on the cards because of, I don't know that yet, so don't quote me.
Yeah.
All I know now is they go at it with chemo, which I started 2 weeks ago. I'm going in right now over to the amazing oncology team in Nace Hospital, which I didn't know existed.
Yeah.
And you won't know until you get yourself in a situation. It's like you see a new car, you know, you're going to buy a new car, you see them everywhere.
Yeah.
Now I know stuff about cancer because I have it. And they're a great oncology team over there. I sit with them now for 3.5 hours. They'll put it, I have a port on my chest here now, you can't see. I put it in through there, and then I go away for 46 hours with cancer with the chemo dripping into my system for that period of time. And I will then get, last time I got very sick, but each time cancer is like a fingerprint. It's different for every single person. And for me, they'll try this treatment and see what happens, and then they'll assess and go from there. Like, my aim is to live as long as I freaking can.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
But you don't know, especially when they're not too sure. I'm not too sure. Nobody really knows. I would have to get something that would be bloody unique.
Yeah. Has that come into your head? Or have you had to have those conversations regarding how unique it is and what the actual, you know, the realistic side of things?
I wouldn't let you in my head. It's been crazy in there at the minute.
I'd say, yeah.
I have had many realistic conversations, and if you want to live better, have a really bad diagnosis. Yeah. I'm living every single moment now. Your filters are gone. Mm-hmm. You don't. You say exactly what you think, and I have had really real conversations. I don't know where this is going because I can't. I don't have any answers. I'm trying not to look too far ahead because I don't know. I have absolutely no idea. And all I know is I went from feeling that I had to sleep sitting up for a while because of the pain. I'm in constant pain, so they're managing pain medication. I actually have a palliative care team, which scares people. Mm. But that's for pain. It's not necessarily what people think it is. And that scared me so much. Imagine the words palliative care being said to you at the age of 43. You're like, I'm on my way out. And actually, no, they're there to make sure that you are not in pain while they're treating you. So you have to remember that. If you hear those words, don't be frightened, please, because I really, really was scared when I heard that. Mm. And they're there to manage that. And so that's the plan. The plan is manage the pain I'm in, see how the chemo goes, and assess from there.
How have you responded to chemo? People respond in different ways to it. It can be quite tough, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was. I only had, as I said, I've literally just had it once. I'm about to go try number two now.
Right.
And it was exhausting. There's a kind of fatigue. You know when you go on a night out, I remember them, they were fun, and you wake up with that groggy head. That groggy head never goes away. Mm. And it stays with you all the time, except for it's a little bit worse. So I usually work, let's say your 100% is your highest of energy. I go down to about a 5 when I'm at my worst, and I get up to 20, and that's my peak when it comes to energy. You've got me, I'd say, at about 30% energy today.
30%?
Yeah.
I've seen you at 100% as well. And
this is 30.
This is 30, yeah. Yeah. Listen, we had a message in there from Rob, your brother, who has taken up the mantle here in KFM as well.
Can't get rid of us.
Doing the sports show at the weekend on a Sunday. He says, if anyone is going to get through this, it's our wonderful sister, Celine. She's a brilliant woman, daughter, mother, sister. We will help her every step of the way, and that comes ill from all her family. And look, I know, Celine, you're incredibly positive. I know you are from coming in here, and you know our families know each other, and you do have a very close-knit family, and I'm sure the support that you've gotten from them from the last few months has been incredible.
Yeah, my sister is an organiser, and she has been amazing. She's just helped me with planning and appointments and times when I've broken down. She's called people to kind of be at my side and get me back up again. And my mom has been amazing too. It's tough enough. You know, we've been through a lot. Our family have been through a lot. My brothers have been helping me out. I've been calling them going, hey, you need to come out and help me with the goats. I've goats. So, you know, they're coming out and sorting out things at my house. But it's I didn't realise how many people I have be affected or been in contact with in my 43 years. I've had so many people want to do things for me. Mm. They're arranging fundraisers because I still have bills to pay. I have to try and sort out my mortgage. I still have to sort out life insurance. I'll try and sort out all these things. I'm filling out forms. Kathleen Smith from the theatre, she was the ex-manager. She stepped in just to help run the place because I can't do everything the same way. The theatre itself is the board have been incredible. They're doing what they can to make sure that I'm not left, you know, completely alone in this.
Yeah.
The staff, like, people are just doing things, and you realise bloody kindness is actually overwhelming at times. I don't know what to do. Sometimes people tilt their head to the side and go, oh, but, you know. And I'm like, no, don't do that.
You don't want sympathy.
I don't need that. Mm-hmm. And that's not a bad thing. And if you've done that, I apologise. It's just, I am now at the point of, tell you what, if you want to do something, just just keep thinking good things. Go live your own life. Don't be worrying about the silly things. I keep seeing things coming up about weight loss. I'm like, why do people worry about this stuff? Even when I was teaching Zumba, I didn't do it for that. I did it for joy. I did it for fun. Don't be worrying about those things. Just go have a bit of crack, you know? Life's too short. It really bloody is.
Well, listen, on that note, you know that you have all the support of all of us here at KFM. We're all rowing in behind you. So many messages already coming in from people saying that they love listening to you on the radio. They love going out and seeing you at shows at the Moat Theatre as well. And you have all the support of people of Kildare as well. The positivity is what really shines through, and I think that definitely goes a long way in helping, because your mindset, I'm sure, is absolutely key.
It is. You definitely need to get yourself in a good headspace. I'm not going to say that at times I haven't had to break out some tablets to help with my head, because I have had moments where I've been so, so low that I couldn't figure out how to get out of the dark. And I am very lucky. I have a daughter. She's aware of everything. I haven't mentioned the actual word, which I will be doing.
Yeah.
But she's just... it's incredible, considering it's just me and her against the world. It always has been. And I've had to change her life completely, from being the two of us at home to moving between two houses and between my own house and my mother's when I need rest. And yeah, I am so bloody lucky that I know now, because it gives me time to fight it and do what I can to stay here a little bit longer.
Well, keep up the fight. Keep doing what you're doing. And as I said, we're all here for you. And I know you've to head over now and get the second round of chemo in Naas Hospital. So best of luck with that. And we'll keep an eye on you and we'll look after you, all right?
Thanks so much. And you keep doing what you're doing. You're bloody awesome.
Thanks a mil, Celine. All right, that's Celine Garvey, KFM presenter. Thanks for coming in to us. After the break, we have our Lily White Spotlight feature. We're looking at Ballyteague and Kilmeade.
Kildare Today with Owen Beatty.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
All right, it's time for our Lily White Spotlight feature here on Kildare Today, as we do around about this time every Tuesday morning. And this morning we're going out to the Kilmeade, Ballyteague, Allen area, where Frank Moran joins us on the line. Good morning to you, Frank.
Good morning, Owen.
We're talking, as we said, about that great area out there around the Bog of Allen, and an area that you're quite familiar with, of course, Frank, having driven the school bus there for a number of years. Tell us a little bit about your memories of the area when you were younger and maybe how it's changed down through the years.
Well, Owen, certainly we've had a far bigger population now than what we had then. Kilmeade in particular, I remember a small village and the first houses, the new houses that was built in it, it's now called Willow Lawns. And I remember in 1964, 65, there was a family here in Derry Mullen moving into them houses. And we had an ass and car here and were moving the furniture for them. And we were getting ready for days for this excursion to Kilmeade. We might as well have been going to Russia. This big journey, the ass had to be shod and we had to be careful because there was a Bella Gregg in Kilmeade and she wouldn't like it if your ass wasn't shod. I remember Jody Moore, RIP, Jody was with us, and my brother Vincent, John, Davy, and we all headed off. And that was one of my earliest memories of going to Kilmeade, them first eight houses there, beyond where Jimmy Welch is, beyond the dispensary there.
Right, and how has the change then, Frank? Obviously, population is a big thing, and even every single village and town that we've spoken about so far here on the show has said that the area has grown. But the likes of Kilmeade and Ballyteague traditionally would have been very, very rural, still are, but people are moving out to that area now.
Yeah, Ballyteague is still very rural. Now, Kilmeade, that first estate, and then Oaklands was built behind that. There was 30 odd houses in that. And then Churchview and Bodkin Place and Preston Heights, the Bawn and Allen Manor, all them estates came in there. And like the population of Kilmeade is probably 1,500 now, you know. Okay, Ballyteague is a little bit different because Cannon is hard to get for one-off houses now. But Kilmeade has really expanded, and Allen, like with them estates there crossing the church in Allen. I remember Allen, there was Flaherty's house across the road. There was very few houses in Allen. McTeague's down at the bottom, Tariq Mulrennan's, and now there's a lot of very fine houses there now, I might as well say. But going to Allen, I remember one thing about going to Allen. Odd time we'd go to Allen Mass. There was a man called Owen Weir, maybe he used to work for John Mack. John Mack was a farmer, if you're ever out the returning road from Kilmeag, that lovely stone house, that's where John Mack was, and Owen Wire had come into Mass, and the centre aisle in Allen Church had a wooden floor. Owen would have a pair of hognail boots, and he'd always arrive just before the priest to come onto the altar, and you'd hear this pair of hognail boots coming down the aisle, the wooden floor, and that was the cue. Owen took his seat, and the priest then came out. That would be my earliest memories of going to Allen.
And just beside Allen Church then, you've the school and the hall, and that hall was actually where my grandparents met from Allen Wood and Ballyteague, had many a dance there in Allen Hall, Frank.
That's the new hall now, but that hall is on the site of the old wooden hall. I remember the hall, don't remember the dances, but that hall apparently was like a ballroom of romance. They came from all round to dances in Allen Hall, you know. There wouldn't have been very much entertainment around the place at the time. And I was only talking to a man recently, like it was either there or Pop Price's Hall in Prosperous, you know. The school, of course, was the other side of the road that time, the opposite side where it is now. I remember when I started, I did the school bus there for 28 years. It was a four-teacher school, and now there's 12 teachers. It's totally moved the other side of the road, and the whole school is demolished. I think that school, the old school, was built in the 50s. A grand new modern school now with great facilities and all in it. We had great times in it, you know.
Right, so Frank, if we look at the sport in the area then, Frank, and obviously we mentioned this with Betty O'Shea in Milltown and also with Pat Cronley in Allen Wood, there's great camaraderie in the likes of Milltown, Robertstown, Ballyteague, Allen Wood, but great rivalry too, and a lot of the bragging rights would have been in Ballyteague last season, Frank, with winning the Intermediate Championship.
I know, Owen, Ballyteague people wouldn't brag. We're very modest.
I'd say that, yeah.
I know, in all fairness, there's a great loyalty to one another, even though there is fierce rivalry. There's not a doubt in the world about rivalry. I'd often see, and you can see it yourself when you're out this way, a funeral time come up, and everybody, rivalries are all forgotten. You know, we got great support out of the parish last year when we're in that final. There's an old Irish saying, we live in each other's shadow, can't think of that scale, and that's why we need each other, you know. For many years, we needed each other when we were St. Mary's, the four clubs in the parish together. Now there's two clubs in the parish together, Allen Wood and Ballyteague. So we certainly need each other, you know. But like they have great cheers, and like Milltown's on a little bit of a roll themselves at the moment, and best of luck to them, you know. And I can see Allen Wood winning the Intermediate in the next couple of years, and Robertstown will bounce back as well, as they do. These things are all cyclical, you know. Being totally honest with you, the big surprise was last year. We were shocked to ourselves, because in the early part of the year we were not going well, and we just got a bit of momentum going, and it just didn't stop. And I'd have to say we're very quite lucky that your own little crowd down there got knocked out, Salins, because I took them to be a major threat, you know.
It meant so much, though, to the people, the so-called old stock of Ballyteague and those players. I know you had a commemoration in the GAA for those players that were involved in the 60s and the 70s, particularly in the early 70s. It meant a lot to those people.
It did. Really, that's the point on it. Now, in the 60s, and we had a celebration there for 60 years, we won our first championship last year from 1962, because the big fear at that time was, we had gone out of business. We formed in 27. In the early 30s, we were gone. Didn't come back till 1951. Then in 56, when Allen Wood formed, they struggled again. And the big fear was you were going to go out of business and become defunct again. 62, when they won the Intermediate, that strengthened our hand then a little bit. But there was still a fear of would we be able to exist. But as with everything, time changes and personnel changes. And a man came into this parish called Father Tommy Riley. He had a huge bearing on the football, not alone in Ballyteague, but Allen Wood, Robertstown, Milltown. We won a schools championship, I think, in 1963. We won two county minor championships in 64, 65. Ballyteague, at this stage, we were getting a little bit firmer. We got to a junior final in 68. Then we come into the early 70s. All these players went on them minor teams. They went back to their clubs and they strengthened their clubs. So in the 70s, I'll just give you a quick run on Ballyteague first. Beaten in the junior final in 71, at the replay by Kilcullen. In 72, we win it. In 73, now alone do we win the Intermediate, but we get to the final of the Leinster Leader Cup as a junior team, which I don't think any other club ever did. We get to the senior final in 74. Now this year is the 50th anniversary of, and we're going to include the 72, 73, and 74. I would call them the golden years. But we must not forget that while we were doing that, Alan Wood also got to a senior final. Now, that is some achievement for two clubs that had parted ways as junior in 56. Here they come in the 70s, but in two county senior finals, which was massive. The other little sleeping giant there beside is Milltown. When we lost that final to Carby in 74, Milltown had taken Carby to a replay in the semi-final, or possibly the quarter-final, and should have won that, both of the drawn match in the replay. So the three clubs became dreadfully strong because of people like Father Tommy Riley. And another man I have to mention, Father Gaynor, in 1971, we won an under-16 championship. At this stage, the threat of going out of existence was gone. And here we were shooting for the stars, playing senior football, like, you know.
And you're doing it again this year, Frank, having won the intermediate championship last season, playing senior football this year, which is a great achievement for a small rural club like Ballyteague. So well done to all involved there. Just before we finish up, Frank, I want to mention the canal and maybe the importance that that would have played and your memories when you were younger around that area in Kilmeag and Ballyteague. The canal was huge. A lot of people worked on the boats or on the bog.
Well, the boats were closed in 1960-61, and I no memories of them at all. But the canals, yeah, the canals were huge. And it's funny you connect the bog with the canals. The big connection there, you work all day in the bog and you are washed in the canal in the evening time. But yeah, the bogs were huge. Everybody in Ballyteague, Alan Wood, once you had turf, you weren't going to go hungry. I was only talking to an old man the other day who carted turf to Naas. And he said, once there was turf in Alan Wood, we'd never be hungry. And the same in Ballyteague. And a lot of the Ballyteague crowd would have went to Newbridge to sell their turf rather than to Naas. The Alan Wood, the Blue Town people would have went to Naas. The Ballyteague, crowd, Grange, Cheegan Bog, they would mostly have sold the turf in Newbridge, you know.
Tough times sometimes, Frank, from people that I've spoken to around the area. Times often were tough, but what really brought people together were people and neighbours.
Yeah, there was that great sense of neighbourliness. Now, we still have that. And there's a great bond in Ballyteague with the people. I would have to say that. That's one thing that makes our club strong, the way that people bond together. And particularly people that have to come into the area, you know. And we've taken them on board. Like, Ballyteague's a much changed area now, with a lot of people that have come into it. I was just thinking of Kilmeag there. Kilmeag is a very historic spot, you know. In the 1930s, Kilmeag had electricity before anyone else had it. A man called Tommy Bowers came to Kilmeag. He was from the Corra. He came to live in Kilmeag, but his responsibility in the army was for electricity. And he was the first man to put electricity into anywhere in Allan Parish. He'd be now the grandfather of the Leesons there, if you know them, and the Bowers. Well, talking football as well, Johnny Leeson, that was on our team in 74, would be a grandson of his. Kilmeag, again, influenced by those that came into it, you know.
And you've set up a historical society there, Frank, and newly established over the last few years, the Allan Historical Society, where people can get involved and learn more about that area, because sometimes it goes under the radar a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I often think of the lads that say pride of place. And there's a great lot to be proud of here. The Historical Society have done some grand little things, little gestures. But one of the things we did this year was, on St. Bridget's Eve, we had a walk from Crosspatrick, the ancient hill of Crosspatrick, across to Allan Church, a part of the Pilgrim's Path in the St. Bridget's Walk. When Bishop Dennis Nulty was here in Crosspatrick during the summer, he said a lovely mass there in the sunny summer evening. He was explaining about St. Bridget's track from Crohan Hill across to Lullymore, across these topers through the bogs, on to Crosspatrick, to Allan, and on to Glendalough. Now, we're not going to Glendalough next year, but we do hope to expand that little walk. We did it by torchlight last year. You would probably know the area. Down Crosspatrick, the far side of Crosspatrick, onto Ballantyne Lane, down that way, across that, onto that, a part of the St. Bridget's Walk that's been preserved for nearly 2,000 years. Thanks there to Tommy Leeson, who minds it. And it comes out just in front of the graveyard in Allan. Now, that was allegedly a stopping spot then, as the pilgrims would go through Allan and on to Glendalough. But we won't be going that far, but it was very, very successful, I have to say. And it was a lovely sight coming down the hill with everyone carrying lanterns, you know.
Good stuff, good stuff. Well, listen, it's fascinating talking to you, Frank. Thanks indeed for bringing us on that whistle stop tour around Kilmeag and Ballyteague. And no doubt we'll chat to you again soon. Thanks, Frank.
Bye all.
And I just see a message coming in there, actually, from one of Frank's old Nace friends. It says, would listen to Frank all day long. He's a great character. Like listening to an old Micheál O'Hare. And also David Brown says, great listening to Frank talking there. He's some man with the information. So thanks for those messages. Lots more have come in to us. One here saying, could you please wish our mum and dad, Bill and Anne O'Sullivan in Athy, a very happy wedding anniversary today. Lots of love from Vanessa, Keith and Tracy. So Anne and Bill O'Sullivan, happy 50th wedding anniversary in Athy today. Back then to the interview that we did with Celine Garvey, revealing and opening up about her cancer diagnosis. Peg says, Celine, you're amazing. I can't believe you're ill. Would never think that listening to you on your show. I truly hope your journey goes smoothly and your treatment works well for you. You're a very, very positive young woman and very funny. Best wishes from Peg. Noel Connolly, Sinn Féin councillor, says fair play to Celine. I've had a number of operations for skin cancer over the past 2 years. Nothing prepares you for the hammer blow of being told you have cancer. Thankfully mine was mild enough. You can hear the positivity coming through the radio from Celine. I hope everything goes well for her. Simple words from people make a huge difference to someone living with cancer. Well done for highlighting this. G in Salins says, best wishes to Celine. Great talking to her. A great listening to her. I love her positivity. Sending lots of love and hugs to Celine. That comes in from Josie O'Keefe in Kildare Town. One here saying, Celine is in our prayers. We know what it's like to go through. It can be quite tough, but wishing her the very best of luck. And also Teresa Harney says, thoughts and prayers are with Celine and we're all there beside you. So keep those messages coming in. 0833 97 97 97. And indeed, this is your final opportunity if you want to be in with a chance of winning today's hamper from Lily O'Brien's to celebrate the lead up to Easter. We're giving away a fantastic Lily O'Brien's hamper. All you have to do is text the word chocolate and your name and where you're from to 0833 97 97 97. And don't forget, their factory shop on the Green Road in Newbridge is open Monday to Thursday from 9am to 5:30, Friday 9 to 5 and Easter Saturday 9:30 to 5 o'clock. And we've a hamper to give away on the show each day this week. We'll be announcing the winner before 11.
Kildare Today with Owen Beatty.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, some more of the messages. Anne in Alan Wood says, it was great to hear Celine Garvey on the show, and also loved listening to Frank Moran talking about Kilmeague and Ballyteague. There was also an email in from a listener to say that I hear you're talking about Kilmeague, but are you aware there's a planning application for a telecommunications mast to be erected in the village of Kilmeague? A very worrying concern that Kilmeague listeners might not be aware of this. Objections are going in from concerned residents. We'll follow up on that and see if we can get more information, but thanks for bringing it to our attention. Let's go down to the Ballytor Moon area where Fine Gael councillor on the Athy Municipal District, Ivan Keatley, is with us. Good morning to you, Ivan.
Good morning, Owen. I'm feeling a little bit overwhelmed here trying to follow those previous two interviews, but I'll do my best, and thanks for having me on.
No problem at all. And Celine was brilliant, and Frank as well, giving a great overview of Kilmeague and Ballyteague. But some of the local issues that you've been raising with the council, Ivan, first of all, you wanted the council to give a time frame for the completion of the feasibility studies, walkways, this is, at Colestown, Ballyshannon and Athy. What's that about?
Yeah, so I suppose, Owen, you and I suppose your listeners probably have a pain in your faces at this stage listening to me talking about Ballyshannon, the need for a walkway come cycleway between Ballyshannon and Calverstown. Also, I've had motions down in relation to the graveyard out at Colestown just outside Castle Dermot, and the need to connect that with some type of a walkway come cycleway. And also, myself and the other members have had numerous motions down in relation to the end of the Blue Way, which is going to have a disconnect between the Horse Bridge, which is just out the leash side, I suppose, of a tie, the Blue Way, which is expected to be completed towards the middle of the end of this year. So Look, we the five members of the Atai and the Bangor Heads together before Christmas and at budget again at budget time to commit LPT money to try and progress the three of these projects. There is a sustainable transport team in the council, but I would be extremely worried that down in Atai we're not getting our fair share of resources from that particular team, in spite of being promised resources for the last number of years. The team is doing great work. We learned late last year that there were 25 successful funding applications for the Department of Transport. But unfortunately, only one of these projects were based down in the Atai MD. So this is an attempt by myself and the other members to try and progress, even if we need to bring in outside consultants, to try and bring about feasibility studies. You'll remember I was on a couple of weeks ago talking about the Quiet Road project up in Auchincollen, whereby the Parks Department have actually applied for funding or have attained funding for that particular project. So, you know, the rural roads in the south of the county need to be looked after. There are 2/3 of the population in the Atai area living in rural areas and the small towns and villages. And we need the same access to funding for walkways and cycleways, not just for tourism, but also for a local amenity. And to be able to send our to be quite frank, to be able to put our children out onto the roads in the knowledge that they're going to be safer than the current road conditions allow. And these three projects are very, very important. So thankfully, the chair of the MD agreed to go away and set up a meeting between ourselves and the Sustainable Transport team to see the best way of progressing these. But I'm glad to report there is some funding available now that will allow them to be examined and for further funding to be applied for so we can progress them.
Okay, we mentioned this to Labour Councillor Mark Lee earlier in the week or last week where he was on with us. It was a joint motion that you brought forward regarding an issue with sewage in the Moon area.
Yeah, and again, Mark mentioned that myself and Councillor Bean attended a community meeting a number of weeks ago now where a number of issues were raised with us following recent works on footpaths and roadworks that were carried out, but also this issue of sewerage blocking the footpath between Moon and Timolin. Now, I had been working on this since Christmas. And from before, many years ago, the same problem occurred. So what we're trying to do now is bring about a long-term solution whereby the council are now asking the residents to set up a management company in order to look after and maintain the sewage treatment plant, which is causing the pollution and, to be quite frank, a public health hazard out on the road and the footpath. If an agreement can be made between the residents and the council have agreed to put to upgrade the plants into a working order. We have central funding and thankfully, the other members agreed with me, myself and Mark, that we would put 15,000 of leftover LPT money from last year to try and help with that upgrade. And we've also assigned some LPT money to help the residents set up that management company or go and get some legal advice. Because to be quite frank, again, on, you know, there's, and this is, again, right around the rural area of the county, there's an expectation there from the council and indeed from Irish Water that states that have developer-led or developer-provided wastewater treatment plants, that it is the residents' responsibility. And to be honest with you, you know, I wouldn't agree with that. We do need Irish Water to come on board here. There is no memorandum of understanding between Irish Water and Kildare County Council, or indeed any other council in the country, as to how these issues and these wastewater treatment plants should be maintained and looked after, and that needs to be done.
Okay.
Also, but for the time being, we need to get this up and running and get the sewage off the footpath.
Just briefly before I let you go, Ivan Mary has been in touch to say, what about a path in Crookstown from the paddocks to Ballytor Hill? It's badly, badly needed. It'll be too late if somebody is seriously injured. Are you aware of the need for a path there in Crookstown?
I am, and I've spoke to many residents about it. There's an opportunity, I feel, there as well for some type of a Grease Valley walk. The Grease flows down the far side of Crookstown down into Ballytor. It's a fantastic facility there in the Tanyard. I do think it is a relatively small stretch of road as well along Ballytor Hill that would make a lovely looped walk back out onto Tor Road in Crookstown. And certainly I would include that when we sit down with the Sustainable Transport team to see can it be looked at.
Okay, Fine Gael, Councillor councillor on the Athy Municipal District with those local issues, Ivan Keatley. Thanks for joining us, Ivan. Some more of the messages that have come into us this morning. Hope all goes well for Celine. She's such a lovely, positive person. I got to know her doing the craft fairs in the moat. She lit up the room when she came to visit all the crafters, sending her good wishes for the future. That comes in from Olivia Maguire. Also, on behalf of Kilmeag Tidy Towns, will you give a big shout out to two local ladies, Sarah and Hazel. Spent the whole day yesterday doing a litter pick on the Kilmeag Rathernan Road. A phenomenal 25 bags of litter was filled by the ladies. Thanks again, ladies, says this listener, Lorna. Our annual litter pick will be in April. Date to be confirmed. All welcome to come out and help. And just before we finish up then, we want to say well done to Peg Conlon in Athgoe in Newcastle, County Dublin, the winner of our Lily O'Brien's hamper for this morning. We'll have another hamper to give away on the show tomorrow morning at the same time between 9 and 11.